Welcome to MGO Podcast 8.8. Apparently part of this podcast is going to result in a GoFundMe page. You'll have to listen to find out why, though. It almost happened again.
Notre Dame on a bye, man.
I mean, we've been Jerks. So close to the superfecta. To be so close to the superfecta so many times this year is good in and of itself.
It is wonderful.
But everyone's always on a bye.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite happen.
Everything.
But Michigan wins 41-8 against Illinois. I'm giving a free Higdon touchdown because he's so much better than Mike Weber. And then, of course, Michigan State loses to Maryland, and Ohio State loses to Penn State on a kick six.
Yeah, that was fun.
even beyond the fact that Ohio State now has a loss, chortle, it's always really fun to, like, see a play that you know you're going to be seeing for decades.
Yes.
Like, that we just saw a piece of, like, Penn State lore. To win a game on a blocked field goal that gets returned for a touchdown. You know, we've been on the wrong side of that.
Maybe.
Occasionally.
Once or twice.
That
Spanish announcer's call, man, where he just starts laughing in the middle of the return.
Yeah, the color
that
guy.
Is so good.
The color guy.
That is so good.
It's just like a...
That was like exactly what I was doing while that was happening.
He sounded like Dr. Claw. Like if his plan actually came off, that's what Dr. Claw would sound like.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Inspector Gadget jokes, that's what you come to this very professional podcast for. Couldn't even get the score right, but that's fine. We'd like to thank our sponsors before we kick things off. Mo Sports Shop, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Homeshire Lending, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, DEO Bookkeeping, and that adds a doozy, Tailgater Concierge, and Michigan Law Grad. Ace, tell me about the blackness.
That's later, Brian.
That's later. Right, that's later. The first thing I literally wrote down on this piece of paper was Higdon greater than signed Mike Weber, which I tweeted out after Higdon's 45-yard touchdown.
Got him.
And I wasn't really being serious, but I mean, kind of, a little bit.
But mostly it was just trolling the heck out of every Ohio State blogger.
And
on
man, did they bite on that.
Hook, line, and sinker.
But Higdon is totally better than Mike Weber.
I mean.
But let's just compare the situations. Higdon had more yards on 9 carries against Penn State than
8
carries.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, then. Then Weber had on 23. I mean,
oh wait, are you comparing Higdon's numbers against Penn State? Because I'm not looking at those.
Sorry,
I screwed that up. I was looking at yesterday's numbers, and Illinois is a little less.
A very professional podcast.
Very professional.
But yeah, Higdon had 9 carries against Penn State, more yards than Mike Weber had in 23.
So yeah, comparison over.
Comparison over. But no, in all seriousness, that the touchdown that Higdon had, he first had the speed to get around the corner. He blew through an angle from an Illinois back. I thought that was a 15-yard run.
Yes. It was well blocked, but out to 15.
Yeah. And then he manages to just blow by that guy to the point where he doesn't even get a hand on.
And then the open field cutback. Just to be able to see that in the open field when you're going down the sideline, sense that you need to cut back between those two guys.
And then he rips away the guy with his hand.
Yeah.
And then, like, burrows for the last 3 yards. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was one of those, like, because I was looking up in the box and they started showing, like, BTN started showing, like, a super slow-mo replay. Like, they were going to review it. And I was so upset that there was a possibility that they might rip that touchdown away from them, and then they kicked the extra point. It was like, okay, good.
Yeah.
So you have to reward excellence on that one.
And he also had a first down on, what, 3rd and 17 on the
– sprint draw, unstoppable, unstoppable.
It's not a sprint draw. It's the offset draw.
That's right.
The sprint draw is the that goddamn counter draw.
That's right.
But the offset draw, which is it's completely unstoppable.
Nobody knows what to do with it.
I assume that somebody is going to stop it someday, but that day has not yet reached us. And it's like Higdon runs it late in games and just owns on it. Sometimes it's just like, oh, I got the ball and now I can leisurely jog into the end zone because I'm playing Rutgers. But in this game, Illinois was defending it relatively well. And Ben Braden did a great job of throwing guys upfield and then actually getting a second level block.
Yeah.
And then on the third down conversion, you know, Higdon has a guy at about 10 yards that he has to beat, and he beats him. And then he extends to the sticks, and I'm just like, man, this guy's a lot better than Mike Weber.
He's good. He's really good.
I mean, Michigan fans are complaining that he's not getting more carries. Ohio State fans are complaining that Weber's getting too many carries instead of Curtis Samuel.
The evidence is piling up here pretty quickly.
The evidence is mounting, veritably.
And yet with Michigan, there's like three other backs that you want to see get the ball also.
Yes. Although one of them was not available in this game until, well, after a really nasty hit early.
Yeah, that was targeting.
I don't think it was. Like, I mean,
he led with his helmet.
I mean,
to me, that's targeting.
I know
it's not against a defenseless player. It's a runner. But
I mean, to me, I thought that was going to be a good hit, and then Evans got hit from behind. And
there was certainly a level of bad luck to that. But I just thought the way the defender – the form there was not textbook.
Was it the crown? I haven't actually seen it.
He definitely dipped his head down.
Because, I mean, we saw Malik McDowell get kicked out of a game for hitting a guy in the midsection because it was a crown of the helmet hit. Yeah. So – if that's
this wasn't like the very top of the helmet, but he definitely dipped his head and it ended up going head to head with Evans.
It usually has to be the top. So I haven't seen a replay. I'll obviously weigh in on it in UFR later this week. But to me, I thought that was.
I was surprised they didn't at least take a look at it.
I mean, they can do that, but as we've seen, I mean, remember that
Texas Notre Dame
game early in the year?
I'm not saying they would have gotten it right.
We should mention, we've briefly touched on it already, but Ben Braden moved out to left tackle this week. They brought in Ben Bredesen at left guard, and for the most part, that went well.
Yeah, early returns, surprisingly good on that.
So Pro Football Focus already has grades up for this game. Can you give me their take on Braden?
They said they didn't list a specific number grade, but they said that while he gave up a sack in a hurry, he was otherwise strong in pass pro, and he was the line's highest graded run blocker.
So that sack, I thought, was more on Wilton Spate than Braden.
He held the ball a very long time.
He did. And, you know, ideally, Braden is able to keep that guy off of his quarterback for even longer. But I'm pretty sure that's not even going to be a pass protection minus from him in my system. So I was very pleasantly surprised by how well that went because
Illinois has some decent defensive ends, so I was expecting a lot more pressure on Spate in this game than there was.
Especially pass rushing guys. Both their ends are very good. And Smoot actually got hammered by PFF and Illinois fans for not playing the run defense basically at all.
Yeah.
But as a pass rusher, he's very good, especially when that's all he's doing on every snap.
Yes.
So for Michigan to mostly hold the door against a team that's pretty good at getting to the passer – gives me more confidence than I've had in the offensive line since Newsom won.
Yeah, Smoot had one tackle, and it was not in the backfield.
Yeah. So I thought that was a very good move from Michigan, especially after last week when Bushel Beatty, I think we can say, had significant struggles.
Against Rutgers.
Yeah. And, Braden didn't really work out very well as a tackle when he was a sophomore, but he's developed as an offensive lineman over the last couple years.
He's very much tackle-shaped.
Yeah, and I still think we're going to see him have struggles against elite edge rushers. But, you know, the early returns against B-plus pass rushers are very good. And I mean, other than the Ohio State game, this was the thing that gave me the most confidence going into that game over the weekend.
Yeah, and there aren't really elite pass rushers left on the schedule except for the
Ohio
game.
State, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that was good. And then we saw another spate of plays where – I kind of didn't want them to put them on film.
But, I'm cool with it.
But they were pretty awesome.
I'm cool with it.
So we saw the train come back, and Michigan breaks from the train into a four-wide formation with all tight ends, gets man coverage, and then rubs off the guy. And then
yeah, meshes the heck out of Illinois.
Ultra mesh. And that works beautifully. We're probably going to have a train-themed t-shirt coming up pretty soon.
Yep.
Because as soon as it happened, the entire stadium was just like, yes, train.
Love it.
I think it's underrated how incredibly fun Jim Harbaugh era is.
It was great. Like, listening to the post-game pressers, like, I used to, like, mostly ignore them because I was trying – for a lot of reasons. I was trying to ignore the audio getting pumped into the press box. But this one, someone asked Wilton Spate about, like – they used the word trickeration to describe the first drive, and Spate kind of initially pushed back against that, mostly referring to Jabril Peppers, like he's mostly saying that wasn't really a gimmick, like he can do that. That's not really trickery. That's just having Jabril Peppers. And then he starts thinking about the train. He's like, well, that's a little bit of trickeration. You can tell, like, those guys love that stuff.
Yeah, and then the other standout play was Eddie McDoom threatening jet sweep and then going back into the flat wide open for a huge chunk of yards. I kind of wish they hadn't put that on film.
I'm okay with it. That's going to open up the jet. There's just so many variations on it at this point that you can't game plan for one of them.
Yeah, but that was a beautiful play. It's going to be an RPS plus three. No question about it.
Yeah.
And it's just fun.
The first drive was football porn.
I mean, you talk about a pro-style offense, right? And there's like the Kirk Ferentz, Lloyd Carr style of pro-style offense. Where, like, the goal is to punt the ball. Like, that's not even
but
a
joke.
But
after, like, gaining some field position.
Right. Well, I mean, the goal is to punt the ball, and then secondarily, if you can score points, that's also good. but I was a little bit worried that this was going to kind of be a stodgy, old-style, not very modern offense.
Nope.
Hey, guess not. And every week we see more evidence of that. And it's just a little tweaks. I mean, we talked a little bit about the offset draw, and that's just a little small thing, but it looks like the back's going into pass protection and you're getting to a defensive end, and the defensive end is much more likely to be pass rushing way up the field.
Yeah.
And it's just that subtle tweak that makes that such an effective play. And those are all over this offense.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about Wilton Spate now.
He was great. This was his best game.
I mentioned last week that I was grumbling about Chris Evans not breaking tackles immediately before he broke three. In this game, I grumbled to my wife after the first Wilton Spate pass, which was well behind the receiver and incomplete. And then he was dialed in, man.
Yeah, he was on a tear. And 16 for 23, and there were a couple of deep passes that were right on that border of getting hauled in.
Yeah.
That could have made his numbers even better. He was locked in on pretty much every level.
Well, and they had that post to Darbo?
I thought it was kind of a bad idea because he had a guy much more open, and that throw was between three or four Illinois defenders.
I think three, yeah.
But he threw it in the absolute perfect spot, so it's tough to complain about that because that was a dead-on plus, I assume, when you're going to go through and grade.
Well, plus you need to get pressure. So plus is reserved for I'm moving around and then I'm doing that. So
fine. Just a dead on.
Yes, it is. But there were a number of those and it felt like he was back to the UCF Spate. And I caught his post-game interview on BTN and he said that he spent the bye week just refining his technique. And
yeah, he said that in the post-game presser too about how he went over every game and was really combing through for stuff to work on.
And he mentioned that, like, he just didn't want to come out of this game thinking, like, oh, I should have made that throw. Oh, I should have made that throw. Like, he really should have last week. I mean, he had, like, five or six passes that were just way off.
Yeah.
In this game, you know, there was just the one, really.
Yeah. And it's nice that he's contracted his slow start period to hopefully just that one throw. And I thought one of the more encouraging throws he made was just a play where he stepped up in the pocket and hit Chesson kind of on that intermediate level when he was getting pressure because that was a throw that the last couple of weeks he's been sailing consistently.
Yeah, I remember that throw. Yeah, that's a good point.
And it was nice to see him just keep that down.
And it's nice to see that, you know, he's developing.
Yeah, I mean,
we hadn't really seen much evidence from it of that recently.
And it's tough to think that that's a fluke when you're coming out of a bye week and you see that much of a difference because that's kind of the. If you're going to expect a leap in play at any point in the season, it would with a first-year starter, it's going to be after the bye.
Yeah.
And he came through on that.
And we still need a couple more games, I think, to really have kind of a this is a Jake Rudock trajectory.
Yeah, there was enough of a track record built up in the first six games of the season where it would be nice to see a game or two more of that. But
I mean, that's
good start.
The biggest takeaway from this game, I think, even including Braden.
Yes.
I mean, for Spate to play this well, to kind of like start showing evidence that the Harbaugh effect is working on him, that's definitely a big thing. And then,
speaking of big things,
TJ Wheatley.
Yep.
How did you know that? How do you know it's going to be that?
I had a feeling.
You did?
I had a feeling.
So he catches a 21-yard, 27-yard touchdown.
I think it was 21.
Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And just watching him catch it and go by a safety.
That safety wanted nothing to do with tackling Ty Wheatley. Nothing.
And Wheatley just got around him with a little stiff arm, and he looks so amazingly smooth and athletic at that size. You know, he's not a great blocker yet. And I had high hopes that he would be after a couple of low sample size events in the spring.
Yes.
But, man, if he can just develop, keep developing, get on the A.J. Williams track, it's going to be crazy in 2 years.
Yeah, people that large shouldn't be able to move like that.
Like Wheatley and Asiasi as juniors.
There were a lot of cackle-worthy moments yesterday, and that was high on the list.
That was. And, you know, we should point out that Michigan is a really low penalty team.
They are.
This kind of stood out to me after watching Riley Bulla take 3 and 11 minutes. I was like, you know what? That really hasn't happened this year.
No.
There aren't stupid penalties.
They don't do dumb stuff.
Maybe there's like a particular amount of dumb stuff in Michigan football, like the state, and it's all migrated to Michigan State. Not only are they taking all the Brady Hoke stuff, but they're taking all of Eastern stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, a lot has migrated from Ypsilanti to East Lansing this year.
So, that's a great theory, and I'm sure it's absolutely true.
Yep, without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Bobby Henderson had a big catch.
He's averaging over 10 yards a touch this year.
Yeah, Bobby Henderson, action fullback.
Action third-string fullback.
Action
I love
third-string fullback. I don't really have anything else. This is kind of the downside of Michigan just whumping people.
They had back-to-back carries by walk-ons wearing number 27 who were not the same person. Which really confused Carl Grapentine and everybody in the stat box.
They challenged a spot in
the
fourth quarter.
They did challenge a spot, and then Harbaugh was still complaining about it at the end of his presser. It was amazing.
They faked a punt.
They faked a punt.
Up 31 to nothing?
Yep.
Oh, God.
Oh. I just spent so much of the second half laughing. It was great.
Yeah, man. I mean, every once in a while, I just kind of think back to 2 years ago, you know? And it's just
I try not to do that at this point.
Well,
I mean,
it's a
beautiful contrast.
It is a beautiful contrast, and whatever small role we played in that, I savor.
Yeah.
So that's the offense, I guess. We're going to come back. We're going to attempt to talk about the defense without just saying, the usual. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew.
But Brian, we podcast in silence.
You are right. But each day, Andrew Deogracias used to go to his corporate consulting job, where each day he felt the darkness.
Andrew is a good worker. He would be a better worker if you let him work in silence.
But each day he felt the blackness. Each day he shoveled numbers to feed the furnace. Each day he worked as hard as he can. But he could stand the silence no more. It occurred to him one day that his work could not stop the darkness, nor the blackness, the black hand that massages as I speak. So he started his own bookkeeping company.
That does not sound like working.
Now he serves small and mid-sized consulting firms and nonprofits across the country, providing bookkeeping and accounting services. He finds others, usually fellow Wolverines, who left the darkness but need a little help.
Andrew Deogracias is a seasoned Big Four strategy consultant. He should work for the blackness.
But Ace, he'd rather work for guys like us, keeping us from missing filing deadlines and handling onerous tasks like editing and formatting our forms and finalizing documents, research, or analysis. If we did consulting work, he could help us with those deliverables, which you don't usually get from a bookkeeper.
But Brian, we do our work in silence.
No. He's an independent freelancer, so he'll do the work himself. And Andrew's offering a deal to Michigan alumni, one free month. Just mention the promotion code Each Day We Work when contacting him. Find us at deobookkeeping.com and schedule a free consultation today. That's deobookkeeping.com. It was the usual, which included less than 200 yards from the opposition. There were a number of big plays that Michigan gave up.
Three. That's the number.
That's a number. It's not like J plays. That's a number. Look, I'm trying to like.
I know what you're trying to do. I'm also trying to provide the balance of like, you know, it wasn't that bad.
And it, nobody said it was that bad.
No.
But we must critique. That's what we do here.
We are trying to be podcast. Critical, analytical, all that
yes.
good stuff. This is a very professional podcast.
Shut up, Ace. Anyway, so they had a long run where I was pretty sure that Chase Winovich was a major problem because mm-hmm. I was watching him get blown across the field as that was happening. And that's been kind of a downside for him. He's too small right now. He's just moved over to the defense.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he was the main catalyst on that sack late in the game that resulted in the Mohurst belly rub.
Yeah, when he can tear off the edge, he's pretty good.
So he's a guy with a lot of potential. He's a redshirt sophomore. You refine it, and hopefully he's a high-quality player as a junior and a senior. But right now, you know, he's kind of got a lack of run oomph.
Yeah.
And then let's focus on the Mohurst belly rub.
Yeah, why not? It was pretty glorious. I love that that's just a thing now that he does consistently.
Well, you know, the last couple of years we've been complaining about how entertaining and likable the Ohio State team is.
Yes, that was a problem in my life.
And now Michigan has that team. I mean, you've got the belly rub and Mike Onwenu's grapes.
You've got Jordan Lewis being himself.
And you have Jabril Peppers, who's a stand-up comedian on the football field.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So in addition to like just kicking the crap out of everybody, this is a really fun team.
Yes.
And then the second long play was a long completion where Gedeon was matched up against Malik
Turner,
who's a legit player. Like he was the one player on the whole Illinois team where I was like, that guy could play for me.
Yep.
And he was one-on-one with that guy. So
up the middle with no safety over the top, which makes you think maybe there should have been one.
And I have some circumstantial evidence for this is that this was after Cannell went out with whatever his ding was.
Yeah.
And they brought in Metellus in his place, which is interesting because it's not Khalik Hudson. Metellus obviously had a great game against Rutgers.
Metellus had some good plays against Rutgers.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. That's much more realistic. And he was in on that play. He was playing a deep safety position. He was not in the middle of the field. And they didn't play him the rest of the way. So, you know, putting two and two together, I have a feeling that Metellus was supposed to be over the top of that and was not. And Gedeon was in position to tackle, so that's good enough from him.
Yeah, I thought he did a pretty impressive job on that play, all things considered.
And the third one was the touchdown, which was
kind of... Toledo Hill, like, had his hand on it, but he timed his jump too early, I think.
Yeah, and Turner is a legit player.
Yeah, 6'3", and high pointed it.
And that's going to happen sometimes. I did predict it on Friday.
Yeah, and then that was just a prayer of a throw, too.
Yeah, well, you see so many of those against Michigan's defense where the quarterback's just like, well, I'm going to die, so I might as well just throw a fly down
the
sideline.
Go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, and one of those finally did hit, and I was like, well, that's inevitable. Yeah. It's eventually going to happen. I just wish they would just eat it, man. Just take the sack. Just stop throwing the ball. It's so irritating.
I got upset in the second half when Chase Winovich made a tackle for loss that Jabril Peppers was about to get.
Oh, I hate that. I do hate that.
These are the things that bother me about Michigan's defense is a lack of Heisman awareness.
It's just there's so many like opportunities where Peppers is right there and someone else gets to it first. And I'm like
we need him to have like 25 tackles for loss.
Clarify what our goals are on defense. So Michigan was actually timing up a lot of Illinois snaps, which was nice to see. I mean, those blitzes that Wisconsin was running against Michigan, it felt like Michigan was incorporating them into their defense.
Yeah, they were timing those pretty well. Jeff George did not have time to really survey the field.
And I felt like one of those from McCray was actually the reason that they fumbled that snap.
Yeah.
Like, he comes in and he's really threatening and then, you know, Jeff George kind of was like, I don't know if I want this ball. And then McCray actually dug under the offensive lineman to get it.
Then recovers it. That was a heck of a play by him.
It was a heck of a play. And then he had that like 9-yard tackle for loss.
Yeah.
On which he got hurt.
Yeah.
But he came back in later in the game.
He was fine.
So he's fine.
That was impressive.
But yeah, he's just mirroring one of Illinois' very good backs. They have two very good running backs. And just got him to the sideline and would not let him escape.
There was that play, and there was one where Illinois ran like a toss sweep towards Jabril Peppers' side, and I was watching Peppers and waiting for him to converge on the play, and then Chris Wormley comes out of nowhere to make a tackle on a toss on the edge, and it was just freakish.
Or Ryan Glasgow running the quarterback out of bounds for no gain.
Yeah, that happened too. That
nose
was nuts.
Tackle,
that
quarterback,
was ridiculous.
Sideline, no gain.
No gain.
Let's put all those together.
I thought that was good. Like, that looked like a sure first down.
It did.
A sure first down.
It's really weird now that I'm like, oh, first down. What did you do?
It really has reached that point, though.
Why are you giving up a first down?
It has reached that point.
What is wrong?
Like, we have complaints about the defense in a game where the first Illinois pass that was caught by a player was caught by DeMonte Thomas on a screen pass.
Like, with 2 minutes left in the second quarter.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Thomas had a heck of a game, by the way. I feel like he deserves some mention here.
Well, he did have that interception.
He had the interception. I don't know. He just had a couple really nice plays in run support, too. He ended up with a nice Pro Football Focus grade.
Did he?
Out of this game. He was the second highest graded player on the defense after Channing Stribling.
That's really interesting.
Because Stribling just erased a receiver for most of the game, I think.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
I don't know how they're looking at that because Jordan Lewis did the same thing. I
mean, yeah.
But I don't know how you come out with that because Lewis didn't end up in the top five. But Thomas was somebody who was noticeably around the ball making plays. There was a near interception pass breakup that he had where I thought it was Jordan Lewis at first because he was playing an underneath zone and then popped out of it on a throw that was in Gedeon's direction.
Oh, yeah.
And ends up with a breakup where that was just a great play because I don't think that's his assignment.
No, and
he just read the quarterback's eyes and dropped out of his zone in order to make a play on the ball.
Yeah, that was a scramble situation, too, because the guy had broken the pocket because it was kind of thrown back.
Yeah.
He had a lot of time.
And I was dead certain that was Jordan Lewis and was like, man, that's a pretty spectacular play by him. And it was like, oh, that's an especially spectacular play by DeMonte Thomas.
Yeah, we had some early safety concerns, I think, after the Colorado game.
Those are mostly gone.
And the UCF touchdown.
Yes.
But over the last 3-4 games, they've been impeccable. I mean, they haven't been tested a whole lot because, yeah.
It's kind of hard to get the ball in the pocket long enough to reach the safeties.
But you can only do what you are tasked with doing, and the safeties have done that excellently. We did see a lot more of the 3-3-5 that Michigan seems to be using as a spread defense. And it wasn't quite as effective as it was against Rutgers, probably because they weren't playing Rutgers.
You know.
And If you look at the numbers, aside from a really bizarre outing against Western Michigan, like this Illinois team has been putting up 5 and 6 yards a carry against everybody they play.
Yeah, those running backs are legit.
And, you know, they're just playing Rutgers. They're just playing Purdue. But they did play Nebraska in there, and, you know, that's an accomplishment for them, even if it is against poor competition. And, you know, Michigan kept these guys almost entirely in check.
Yeah, I mean, other than the one breakout run by Keyshawn Vaughn, there was really not much at all on the ground.
No. I mean, they had probably less than 50 yards of that run.
Yeah, they had 77 yards total, and that run was 45.
So they had less than they had less than 30 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
actually, when you take out the sack, it gets closer to even, but still.
But still, I mean, that's an excellent performance against a guys, a team that had been putting up 200 yards on the ground in most games. So an excellent test for this run defense. Their offensive line is much better overall than Rutgers.
Yes.
They had one very bad player, but, you know, Michigan was able to get to all of their defensive, their offensive linemen. So,
yeah, the one sack for Michigan is pretty misleading because they were in Jeff George's grill all day.
Yes, and he was just throwing heaves down the field.
Yeah, that's how you get a quarterback to go 4 for 15.
4 for 15. And my thought is just like, what's the four? Why four?
I mean, one of them was just a prayer.
Why four?
One of them was a bust.
Four, why four?
Yeah.
It's just my alignment, my sensibilities have been completely reset in like 7 games.
Yeah, it did not take long at all to go just right back to expecting perfection.
Yeah. It's crazy, man.
It's fun.
It's crazy fun. All right, we're going to take one more break. Did you know the black and white striped referee uniform seen on the field today was created at Moe's? In the early days of football, officials wore white dress shirts, bow ties, and beret-type hats. But when an Arizona quarterback confused Ypsilanti's Lloyd Olds for a player and mistakenly passed him the ball, he asked his friend George J. Moe to make a distinctive shirt to set him apart. The new striped uniform was effective, but hated by fans. Olds was met with plenty of boos from the crowd when he first wore it in 1921, and more when he called targeting. Moe's Sports Shop is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at mostsportshops.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693. Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew.
Andrew is a good worker. He would be a better worker if you let him work in silence.
But each day he felt the blackness. Each day he shoveled numbers to feed the furnace. Each day he worked as hard as he can. But he could stand the silence no more. It occurred to him one day that his work could not stop the darkness, nor the blackness, the black hand that massages as I speak. So he started his own bookkeeping company.
That does not sound like working.
Now he serves small and mid-sized consulting firms and nonprofits across the country, providing bookkeeping and accounting services. He finds others, usually fellow Wolverines, who left the darkness but need a little help.
Andrew DeGracias is a seasoned Big Four strategy consultant. He should work for the blackness.
But Ace, he'd rather work for guys like us, keeping us from missing filing deadlines and handling onerous tasks like editing and formatting our forms and finalizing documents, research, or analysis. If we did consulting work, he could help us with those deliverables, which you don't usually get from a bookkeeper.
But Brian, we do our work in silence.
No, he's an independent freelancer, so he'll do the work himself. And Andrew's offering a deal to Michigan alumni, one free month. Just mention the promotion code each day we work when contacting him. Find us at deobookkeeping.com and schedule a free consultation today. That's DEO Bookkeeping.
Keep it.
That's deobookkeeping.com.
Best ad read ever.
I was born in Michigan, and I wish and wish again that I was back in the town where I was born. There's a farm in Michigan, and I'd like to fish again in the river that flows beside the field of waving corn. A lonesome soul am I, here's the reason why. I want to go back, I want to go back, I want to go back to the farm, far away from home. With the milk pail on my arm, I miss the rooster, the one that used to wake me up at 4 a.m. I think your great big city's very pretty.
We're going to play in the Rose Bowl this year, I guarantee it.
Nevertheless, I want to be there, I want to see.
We welcome in Jamie Mack at JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing great. I'm wishing Notre Dame had played yesterday.
Yes, we have lamented that as well. Yeah. Let's start off with the headliner. Penn State 24, Ohio State 21. This should not have been a Penn State victory. They got outgained by about 150 yards. McSorley was 8-23. You know, they didn't exactly blow the doors off here in an equal game, but they made enough plays that it was close enough for them to capitalize on the kick six, and Ohio State has a loss.
Well, they blocked two kicks in the fourth quarter, and I don't know how we could research this, but I'm sure teams have a horrible record if you allow two blocked kicks in the fourth quarter. They blocked a punt that set up a field goal, and then, like you just said, the kick six, which was just a great play, wasn't it? And they had the television angle was from the end zone, but you saw 15 just sprint down the sideline the whole time untouched. It was pretty cool.
It was. We mentioned that it's fun to watch an iconic play kind of unfold before your eyes.
Yeah. You know, and what an interesting sequence. First of all, you know, Ohio State is trying to ice the game because they're ahead. They just converted a fourth down, so they have a first and 10. They throw three straight times. JT Barrett threw it behind Marcus Baugh on first down. Then they did a backwards pass to Curtis Samuel on second down, and Penn State swarmed that. So they had third and long. And then, you know, the third down pass play was down the seam, and it was a play that was more likely to be picked than caught by an Ohio State receiver. And then they rushed a field goal team out there. You know, they weren't sure, I guess, what to do, or, you know, I don't know. It was going to be a career-long attempt, and they didn't send the field goal team out there until there was about 15 seconds to go on the play clock. Now, they didn't look, you know, they didn't look discombobulated when they lined up, but it just I thought, what a weird sequence for Ohio State. You know, just three throws, and then they just, you know, put that field goal unit on kind of late.
Yeah, and, you know, overall, you kind of have to question what they were doing offensively. So Weber has 21 carries for 71 yards.
Yes.
Samuel has two carries.
For 71 yards.
And you'd think that you would point at one of these guys and be like, you get more carries, and the other guy would be like, you get fewer carries.
Yeah.
Because you're worse than Karen Higdon.
Totally. Right. Curtis Samuel's line is crazy. He had two carries for 71 yards, and his long run of the day was 74 yards. And I think, it seems like one week it's, well, they're not getting Curtis Samuel the ball a lot, so then they start feeding him, and then the next week it's like, oh, they're not getting Weber the ball a lot. So then they start giving it to him, because they said after the Indiana game 2 weeks ago, they wanted to get 15 to 20 touches for Samuel, and that's exactly how they responded in the Wisconsin game, to the detriment of touches on for Weber. And yesterday, I mean, it just seemed like they forgot about Samuel. Two carries, eight catches, so 10 touches. So that's a lot less than what they want specifically for him.
And Penn State, I can't believe I'm saying this, but they absolutely shut down JT Barrett as a runner. He got sacked a few times, but he only had 26 total yards as a runner, which is just mind-blowing.
You don't see that.
I mean, I know they got a couple of linebackers back, but I couldn't see that happening with that defensive line, which didn't really do very well against Michigan.
Yeah, no, they have not defended the run, period, very well against Power 5 opponents. They've kind of been gashed, and I just think the whole thing was strange because – you know, we're used to seeing Penn State games kind of unravel for the Nittany Lions because they can't, you know, protect the passer, and it's just this, you know, avalanche of defenders on the quarterback. You know, and it was just the opposite yesterday. They got six sacks on JT Barrett, five of them in the second half. They couldn't sustain any drives in the second half because they couldn't protect the passer.
And Barrett ran out of a number of sacks too.
He was under total siege. It was almost as if the offenses had flipped at times. When they were passing the ball, because that's usually how we see other defenses, you know, chasing around Penn State quarterbacks.
And it could have been worse. I mean, Garrett Sickles was suspended for the first half of this game. He comes in, he has 2.5 sacks and a half a play.
Yeah, yeah. What a game. They Ohio State had only allowed 9 tackle for losses through their first 5 games. Their last 2 games against Wisconsin and Penn State, they've allowed 18. And Penn State got him for 11 yesterday, including those 5 second half sacks, which I already mentioned.
I think Pro Football Focus focused on their right tackle, Isaiah Prince, as a major problem for them. So how's that going to go against Michigan?
I have a guess.
Not good. Never good. Never good to, yeah. Your tackles need to be pretty excellent to even survive against Michigan.
So Prince is a problem, and they're also starting a true freshman at left guard. So, you know, I think the Michigan's going to have a huge advantage on the defensive line there.
Yeah, you know, I think so. You know, these last 2 weeks have just been, I feel, so revealing for Ohio State's offense. You know, they sputtered a little bit against the Hoosiers, you know, but, you know, maybe they're looking ahead to kind of the harder parts of their schedule. But just these last 2 weeks, it just seems like, we talked last week how, you know, Michigan is going to bring a lot more talent to the table than even Wisconsin. You know, we saw what Wisconsin did. Penn State, they just, like, they played the games of their lives and had 11 TFLs. And, you know, a team like Michigan, they just need to play their game, and they're going to get a lot of TFLs against you.
So I just pulled out the Pro Football Focus article from this game.
Yep.
Anybody want to guess the number of pressures that Penn State had?
34.
That is
exactly
the number.
It had to be at least over 50%. Was it at least over 50%?
They don't say the number of dropbacks, but it was 34 pressures, and Isaiah Prince, the right tackle, accounted for almost half of those by himself. So he might get murdered against Michigan.
I mean, Barrett had 43 passes, so add in the sacks there, and it's probably about 50. So
you're getting pressured on almost
two-thirds of your dropbacks.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. And against a Penn State line that really didn't do much against Michigan's OL.
No.
Like, we're getting some excellent comparative games here, and
boy, are they excellent!
Yeah,
yeah,
yes,
right.
So, how are we feeling?
JT had 60 carries, 60 rather combined carries and dropbacks, and he only had 271 total yards. That's 4.5 yards per carry or dropback for JT. One, that's not a lot of yards, and two, that's a lot of work. We've kind of hinted at that, but that's a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, they've been relying on Barrett as a runner much more than they did a couple years ago when it was just kind of the lethal counterpart.
Yeah.
And Ohio State really doesn't have anyone who gives them explosive plays except Samuel.
Yeah.
So that's like doubly bizarre.
Their play calling is weird.
I think that's something worth mentioning. We focused on the, you know, what Michigan could do maybe against this offensive line, but how are some of these Ohio State receivers going to get any separation against Michigan's defensive backs? I mean, that's another issue. Nobody's ever open for Ohio State.
Yeah, Brown at least can box some guys out, but, like, McLaurin just doesn't impress me at all.
Baugh's actually a pretty impressive athlete, and he's a good runner.
Yeah, he had a really impressive touchdown on that game.
But, I mean, Samuel's probably the best receiver.
He's super inconsistent, though, and he also was really limping hard at the end of the game last night.
Yeah, there was a pretty critical third down where him and Barrett were very much not on the same page, and it looked like it was on Baugh for not adjusting to a blitz.
But he definitely
looks good.
Yeah.
He's an athlete. I remember a game earlier in the season where he had like a leaping one-handed stab where he looked like Devin Funchess.
He's a really talented player. Yeah. There's no question.
Just inconsistent. But, I mean, Samuel's their best receiver. Like,
yeah.
If I was them, if I'm not running him, I'm
that dude should be a Heisman candidate if they get the ball to him enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, at the end of September, he was on pace to be the first guy to ever have 1,000 yards rushing and receiving, and he's fallen off that, I think.
I'm sure he has.
Yeah.
And then Barkley, you know, the other interesting thing about the Pro Football Focus article is that Barkley got most of his yards before contact, which is
What you'd expect with Penn State's line going against anybody, really.
No. I mean, they've had some issues with their starting defensive tackles. Tracy Sprinkle's out for the year, and Pro Football Focus thinks that their backups are playing better than their starters. And to me, even if their backups are playing better than their starters, I mean, you need two guys at each of those spots. Ohio State doesn't seem to have one.
Yeah, Penn State's top three graded offensive players in this game are their right tackle, their center, and Barkley.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Who is the right tackle?
Brendan Mahon.
Okay. Like, Penn State has two offensive linemen have excellent games.
Their top two graded players are offensive linemen.
Yeah, that's
crazy. On offense.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, about what you were talking about Barkley and his yards before contact? Don't forget against Wisconsin. We brought this up on the podcast last week that against Michigan, the Wisconsin backs averaged like 0.5 yards before contact. But against Ohio State, it was like over 1.5 yards before contact.
According to PFF, Barkley didn't have to break a tackle, and he got 99 yards.
On only 12 carries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And 41 of his 99 were before contact. So he was just dragging some guys for a little bit, but he never broke a tackle. And he got 99 yards against Ohio State.
That's so
crazy.
So
there was a stretch where it was kind of funny that, you know, they were hanging in the game and he barely touched the ball. I mean, like, he only had like 6 or 7 carries. But then I looked back through the play-by-play and I noticed that he had like 3 catches, though, that moved the chains. And you always forget. He's a weapon for them, too, passing the ball.
It seemed like it clicked for them on the touchdown drive at the end of the first half. I was kind of going nuts at home because they weren't giving the ball to Barkley and they weren't targeting Godwin. And against Ohio State, you want to get to the ball to your two really good players.
Yeah.
And they chucked one long to Godwin.
Great catch by Godwin against Conley for the touchdown.
And they targeted Barkley on a wheel route. It didn't get complete, but they tried Barkley on a wheel route before they got the touchdown at the end of the first half, where all of a sudden they kind of figured out, like, hey, we should get the ball to our good players. And that paid off.
Yeah, pro tip.
So is Michigan going to be favored?
Well, and then their second touchdown drive, when it was 21-7, their second touchdown drive was what we've seen out of Penn State all year, just big plays. They got a 37-yard run out of Barkley, and then the very next play was a 35-yard pass play down to Blacknell that took them down to the 2. So in 2 plays, they got down to 2, and then all of a sudden it was 21-14.
Hey, is Michigan going to be favored in this game? Is that possible? Am I crazy?
I don't know. You know, the line had crept really high, upwards to 8 points, but I noticed this week Ohio State was still favored by 6. But I was thinking about that, too, last night. You know, as the game finally ended, I was thinking, you know, this when they if they reopen betting lines for that game this week, I wouldn't be surprised to see it down at, like, you know, -2, -1 for Ohio State.
Quite a season, this 2016 season.
And meanwhile, Michigan just opened as 18-point favorites against Michigan State.
Did they?
Yes, they did.
That's too low.
That is low. That is the universal reaction, too, which is great.
Well, that line on Friday, so the game, you know, the day before the weekend, obviously, Friday, that's usually what Friday is, right?
Thank you.
Thanks. I always forget what day this gets posted and what day this gets recorded. I get confused easily. But on Friday, Michigan was favored by 20 points over Michigan State at sportsbook.com.
All right, we have to take a short break here.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest from Homeshare Lending. By now, you've probably read about my company on MGO blog, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the most important people in my life, my sons Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
I'm 7.5.
Colby, how old are you?
I'm 5.
Okay, boys, I have 3 really important questions to ask you. Who's your favorite team?
Michigan.
Who's going to win the big game?
The Wolverines.
And if you could buy or refinance a house with any company, who would you use?
Homeshare Lending.
Good boys. Homeshare Lending, 855-6-BE-SURE. Visit us online if that works better for you, homeshurelending.com, HOMESURE lending.com. We've helped Brian, Seth, and a bunch of readers buy or refinance their homes, and we'd love to help you too. All right, only thing left to do. Boys, can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue.
Homeshore Lending, NMLS number 1161358. Again, give us a call, 855-6-BE-SURE.
As Jim Harbaugh and the 2016 Michigan Wolverines begin their journey towards a 43rd Big Ten championship and 12th national title, it's important that you're also preparing for this historic season. If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law, in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com.
What would make your next visit to a Michigan game even better? How about getting together with your family and friends for a great tailgate with no effort? It's so easy thanks to Tailgater Concierge. Just go to tailgaterconcierge.com and choose one of their most popular packages or create a customer order to fit your specific needs. They will take care of the rest by setting up your tailgate right across from the stadium on Main Street and cleaning up afterwards to ensure you are on time for kickoff. Tailgater Concierge, an easier way to tailgate.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Leonardo leads, Donatello does machines.
That's a fact, Jack.
Raphael is cool, but rude.
Give me a break.
Michelangelo is a party dude.
Maryland 28, MSU 17. MSU remembers they have L.J. Scott on their team. He rushes 20 times for 128 yards. Their team rushes for 270 yards, and they still managed to lose this game. Somehow.
By multiple scores.
Yeah. By multiple scores, they get slightly outgained by Maryland. And Maryland had two guys go over 100 yards on the ground, two little scat backs who just, you know, popped up through holes in the Michigan State line and jetted for the secondary. It was a lot of running for both teams. And
Karen Higdon's ears just perked up.
Karen Higdon, who is better than Mike Weber. and then Perry Hills was 21 to 27.
I struggle with that too. Don't worry.
21 to 27. Perry Hills.
No picks. Two touchdowns.
Boat anchor Demetrius Cox.
Woo.
How you doing, Jamie?
There's so much to cover here. We're already off to a great start with this game, but I don't know. What was your favorite part, guys? Was it the Riley Bulla?
Yes.
Penalty outburst that got him ejected? Was it the fake field goal where they wanted their kicker to run it in from 30 yards when they had a 20-mile-per-hour wind behind their back? Or was it the touchdown where there was the wide-open DJ where there was no Michigan State player on the television screen?
Oh, this is such a hard choice, Jamie.
I know. And then the end result, though, might be the best. Choice B is Eastern Michigan is ahead of Michigan State in the current S&P ranking.
Yep, that is the answer.
Big Ten.
Woo.
Mac.
Eastern Michigan, by the way, lost, I think, by like two touchdowns to Western Michigan.
They were hanging around for a long time.
They were hanging around. I didn't watch it, but we were following the score at UM Stadium. And yeah, it was close. But I just want to point out that, Eastern didn't win a game this weekend. They lost by two touchdowns.
And they moved ahead
of Michigan State.
Michigan State. God, 2016 has been bad in some ways, but this football season could not be more perfect.
Yeah, it's going pretty well. You know, going back to the first thing, the Riley Bulla penalty escapade. They had to bring in Joe Bocci to replace him. They burned his red shirt.
Who?
Yeah, I have
Joe
no idea who that is.
Joe Bocci.
Freshman, another freshman. They're playing six true freshmen, and they're playing a combined 12 true freshmen and redshirt freshmen. But it seems like every week they're burning a redshirt. And this week they burned this kid's redshirt because Riley Bullock couldn't contain himself.
I have a good Pro Football Focus stat.
Oh, hit me.
All right.
Maryland running back Lorenzo Harrison averaged 4.4 yards after contact.
And he's like a little dude.
Yes. He is not big.
I've talked about him before on the podcast. I like him.
I liked him too, but
I liked him a lot last night.
Well, their running backs, Ty Johnson and Lorenzo Harrison, those two guys, 26 carries, 220 yards. That's 8.4 yards per carry.
Sounds good to me.
That's, yeah. I mean, they're just falling apart.
Yeah.
Falling
Maryland
apart.
Had 12 plays of at least 15 yards last night.
And I mean, the thing that kind of leapt out to me is that Michigan State hasn't been able to run the ball against anybody. And Maryland was getting kind of crushed up front all night. And I was just like, how bad must this Maryland defensive line be?
Yeah.
And then they lost. And then they won the game by two scores.
Well, the thing about Michigan State is they also haven't been able to pass the ball against anybody.
No. Well, I mean, that's another, I thought Lewerke looked all right, but a couple critical times he just threw at guys' feet, and that is obviously not good. But kind of like what we said about Ohio State, you know, who is getting separation against the Michigan defensive backs in Saturday's game to help Lewerke out? You know, I just don't see it.
So I think we've thoroughly beat the dead horse of Michigan State football. Let's move on to the dead horse of Iowa football. Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
This isn't the right score. What was the final score? It was like
17-9.
17-9. You got 14-9. Dave. And this was a meat fest. This was a slug meat fest. Meat slug fest. Wisconsin actually dominated this game, but they fumbled into the end zone.
Yeah.
They missed a chip shot field goal. They outgained Iowa by almost 200 yards. Hornibrook didn't throw very much, but when he did, he was over 10 yards an attempt. And Clement kind of ground his way forward, 35 carries, 134 yards. And Iowa could do almost nothing in this game. Beathard had a Nick Sheridan-like stat line with 4.6 yards of passing attempt. It was just, I mean, I was watching this game, most of it, and it was just Iowa wasn't – I didn't expect them to be as good as they were last year. I didn't think that they were a 12-0 team last year or 12-2 team last year. But to regress as horrendously as they have, despite returning an awful lot of talent, at least they didn't extend Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah, they were. I felt like they were thoroughly dominated yesterday. It should have been 17-0 at halftime. Instead, it was 17-3. You know, like you mentioned, the fumble at the goal line there, pretty much made sure that game stayed close going into the second half. Iowa just hasn't been able to put anything together against quality teams this year. You know, they haven't been able to run the football against good teams. Against Wisconsin, Wadley and Daniels only combined for 79 yards on 20 carries. You referenced Nick Sheridan, the Nick Sheridan-like QB line for Beathard. Yeah, their passing attack is basically just yesterday. That's all it was like bubble screens to Riley McCarron. What's that going to do? That's not doing anything.
No. It's just shocking, like how they were good, and then they get the extension, and it's just like now we're back to not being good at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the silver lining for Iowa fans is that this probably won't be a 7-6 season, so it won't vest as a completely guaranteed one for Kirk Ferentz.
They're 5-3, man.
Right.
Oh my God, they could get it.
They're gonna get there.
They're gonna get there. I feel so bad for the Iowa fans because, like, I know a bunch of them, like Jacoby and Patrick Vint, and just like. I can't imagine what it must be like to just know that you're going to have to watch this for 10 years.
Yeah, on second look, they might not get there because their remaining games are at Penn State, Michigan, at Illinois, and versus Nebraska. So there's one win in there.
Yeah, maybe.
Oof. Maybe.
They did only beat Rutgers by 7, so I mean, anything is on the table.
They'd have a bowl game where they could get to that magic
That's
number.
True. Oh, that would be the worst way to backdoor a 7-win season for Iowa fans. Good God, that's cruel.
Beating a Mac
team. You talk about Iowa fans. I think they stayed home yesterday is what they did. There were tons of red in the stadium. Now, you know, you're just watching it, you know, on TV from our tailgate, but you know, it seemed to stand out. So there's definitely a dispirit in the fan base, and you know, once again, it's just this pop gun offense. They had 12 drives yesterday, 5 were 3 and outs or worse, and they had 2 others that were 5 plays before they punted, and now they're up to 27 3 and outs on their last 78 drives, and that includes a game where they did really well against Purdue. So there's actually like a good performance in there that actually skews those bad numbers, even, you know, that makes those bad numbers look better in their favor.
Oh man, that's a Big Ten. Big Ten.
Yeah. And for the third time in the podcast, I'll ask: how are these receivers going to find any room against Michigan's defensive backs later in the year?
I mean, Vandenberg was the kind of guy who could catch a ball that's heavily contested, but
they don't have that right now.
Yeah,
right.
And
I mean, we've seen 3 teams: North Dakota State, Northwestern, and now Wisconsin shut Wadley and Daniels down. Michigan is definitely going to be able to do that, and you know, what we talked about a lot this past week on Twitter was if Michigan was going to be a double-digit favorite in every game before Ohio State. Yes, emphatically, and if that had ever happened before. And we looked it up, and that's never happened before.
Yeah, it's just we were talking about Wisconsin's resume and how it's like, you know, one of their big wins that got in the top 10 was Michigan State, and that's not looking that awesome anymore. But they did dominate this Iowa team. Like, they've basically dominated every team they've played that isn't Michigan or Ohio State, and they outgained Ohio State. So I think this is a legit Wisconsin team.
I think so.
We'll find out a lot more this weekend.
I mean, you know, they
play Nebraska.
Yeah.
They shut down, you know, they did a pretty good job against Leonard Fournette way back when in the opener. And on Saturday night, Leonard Fournette was a video game against Ole Miss.
3-4 Ole Miss.
So
shouldn't have hired a gym teacher who just takes payola. That's my opinion. That's just my opinion. Also my opinion. Karen Higdon is better than Mike Weber. All right, moving on. Nebraska 27, Purdue 14 in a game Purdue led into the third quarter.
Yeah.
Which is like, ooh. But Nebraska did pull it out. They had a couple of big touchdowns afterwards. They did outgain Purdue by about 80 yards. But this is kind of a warning sign for top 10 Nebraska as like a concept.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they're kind of like one of those teams that they just have a goose egg in the loss column, so they just sort of climb 2 or 3 spots every week, regardless of what they do. There's always enough chaos during every week where, you know, oh, they had to squeeze by and win 15 against Illinois or just by 10 against Purdue. You know, that doesn't really get noticed as much, but Purdue hit an 80-yard touchdown on a 3rd and 11 midway through the second quarter. That gave them a lead, and that lead held up, as you said, into the second half. But every week Nebraska does this. Most of their games are undecided as we get into the fourth quarter. You know, going back to the start of the year against Wyoming and Fresno, those games were within a score going into the fourth quarter before a lot of different things happened, and Nebraska put up a ton of points in both those games in the final quarter. The Illinois game, you know, was 13-10 Illinois before, and ended up being 31-16. And you know, Indiana last week was down to the wire. So, you know, they haven't really, like Penn State, for example. You know, they showed up and they blew Maryland out. You know, Nebraska hasn't really done anything like that, and they've had opportunities against Illinois and Purdue, for example.
Yeah, and that game next week is probably going to be for the division, and I'm favoring Wisconsin pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Oh, I am too. I am too. The Badgers have been, frankly, they've been the play of the year, right? I mean, you know, covers against LSU, Michigan State, Michigan, Iowa, Ohio State. The game's finally at home, you know, and I know they played Ohio State at home, so I should probably take that finally out. But I think they're gonna blow Nebraska out. Another thing to consider about Nebraska is they're still banged up. Westerkamp still hasn't gotten back to the lineup. Ethan Carter, their extremely athletic tight end, has still not got back into the lineup. Ozigbo returned last week, but then he went out and hasn't come back. So they're also not at full strength. They rely way too much on Tommy Armstrong running the football at this point. And I think that the Badgers are just going to throw him into kind of the 8-for-27 sort of game when he's throwing the ball. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Badgers ran away with the game. The only problem is they just constantly shoot themselves in the foot. It's been going on now for a couple seasons. They can't take advantage of all their scoring opportunities, and they just let teams linger. I mean, let's be honest, if Wisconsin had better execution in the red zone against Ohio State, the division might already be pretty much wrapped up for Michigan.
Yeah, and that.
So that's their problem. That's their fatal flaw. If they end up losing this division, it's going to be because they're leaving points on the field. And if they get into a big bowl game and they don't show well, it's going to be because of that. The defense is still lights out.
It is.
I mean, Beagle is getting back in the lineup slowly but surely. So.
Yeah, I have faith that like when Wisconsin gets into like the Citrus Bowl, that they're gonna do well.
Yeah.
Like they've already beaten LSU, and LSU is more competitive than they looked early in the year.
Yeah, totally.
This is a kind of a downer game for you. Northwestern 24, Indiana 14.
What
Clayton
happened?
Thorson, 285 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, no
Clayton
interceptions.
Thorson
Clayton
is
Thorson
on fire. I mean, he's a whole different quarterback in Big Ten play. He was 14th after the non-conference schedule in completion percentage, 13th in passer rating. These are Big Ten rankings, by the way, and 9th in touchdowns. In Big Ten play, he's first in the league in touchdowns with 10, and he's second in both completion percentage and passer rating. Now, those are just three, you know, kind of random stats, but we dogged on this kid a lot at the start of the year, but he's sort of turned it around. And Austin Carr, I mean, he's probably the reason why Thorson is doing so well. He caught his 9th touchdown pass against the Hoosiers. He went for 125 yards. He's got some really good numbers going. He's got 100 yards in 4 of their last 5 games. He's caught at least 6 balls in 7 straight Northwestern games.
And he's really emerged, and he's taking up the Vandenberg mantle as the best white wide receiver in the Big Ten, which is why Northwestern is excelling and Iowa is struggling. There can only be one.
Right.
Jordan Westerkamp would like a word.
Well, he's not playing, man.
Yeah, he's hurt.
Have we ever thought
I went on and on about Austin Carr in hopes that I wouldn't have to talk about Indiana.
Have we ever thought about that Northwestern, like, looked at what Washington State does every year and was just like, that's actually a good plan?
Yeah.
I mean, they lost to an FCS team. They start off 0-2.
Oh, this wasn't like a strategy thing. This was
They looked at it and they're like, you know, like, that was a 9-win season for them. That's a good way to go about doing that. And they're executing their plan very well.
The long con.
Yes.
Of this, yeah. It's an interesting strategy.
Yeah, I think it's plausible.
Well, you know, I mean, it's hard to believe after those first couple of games, though, and because Western's – and, you know, well, Western Michigan's turned out to be really good, so losing to them is not that bad, but that Illinois State game that you guys just referenced, the FCS loss, they were so bad in that game.
Yeah, honestly, Northwestern being in a competitive game with Western, it looks good for them now. And
yeah, it does. It does.
Would look good for large portions of this Big Ten game.
Before we move on, we should note the best moment of this game, which was Richard Lego throwing an interception to a guy who had one hand in a club cast.
That was
it was an amazing play.
It was.
You and I have different ideas of best moments of the game.
I'm sorry, Jamie.
You know, no, that's fine. I'm with you there.
Well, he just keeps throwing picks.
He threw 59 times yesterday for only 5.4 yards per attempt.
So this is not a chaos team really anymore. Like their defense is too good, their offense is too bad.
Yeah, you know, this is actually a team that might have some receivers that could be interesting against the defensive backs, but their quarterback Lego is not performing well. He has 11 interceptions in his last 5 games. That's more picks than Nate Sudfeld had in his final 18 games that he started as a Hoosier, and we definitely have a flashing signal at tackle for Michigan's defensive lineman. Coy Kronk, the right tackle for the Hoosiers, has been a problem all year. He's a freshman, and yesterday he had his hands full. He had one of those terrible sequences where he had a clipping penalty, and then he allowed a sack, and that's going to be a big-time problem for the Hoosiers.
I feel like Afede Odenigbo is just the dude who comes around and exposes every crappy Big Ten West tackle.
Yeah, he's really locked in this year after kind of being a disappointment. He was a big recruit.
Yeah, a legit 4-star for Northwestern.
And he's living up to it this year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've really turned their season around. That Wisconsin game that they're going to play in November could be pretty interesting because they've beaten the Badgers 2 years in a row. And I know one of those years the Badgers had, this might have been the last, no, it was the first, no, maybe it was 3 years ago, but they had a BCS bowl on the line, and I thought they lost to the Wildcats in the finale, but they keep losing just crummy games to them, like 14-7, 13-6, that kind of stuff.
Indeed, and we should get to the headliner of the week.
Because Wisconsin is going to, not to interrupt you, but Wisconsin, as good as they are, they still have two league losses. They really can't afford, even if they put Nebraska away, as we expect, they still can't afford to lose to Northwestern or, you know, they won't be in the Big Ten title game.
That is accurate, but we have to get to the headliner of the week, which was Minnesota 34, Rutgers 32, a game that Rutgers led deep into the fourth quarter.
With 10 seconds left, they were leading.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Somehow.
What was that reason?
Beats me, man.
Playing Minnesota?
Minnesota's not very good.
Was Mitch Leiter playing in this game? I didn't see a second.
Yes, Mitch Leiter was playing. He actually averaged 8.7 yards an attempt, albeit with a pick. Statistically, this game was... It ended up being relatively close yardage-wise. They were within 30
yards. I think the story is Rutgers' new quarterback looked really good. I mean, his numbers look really good.
He had really good as relative.
He had one touchdown that was like almost like a bomb. You know, like we haven't seen Leviano do that since
Antu
left campus.
He averaged 5.8 yards an attempt with two picks.
That's good for Rutgers.
Rutgers, that's awesome.
Leviano stats?
For anybody else, that's horrible. But, you know, I guess when you're grading on a curve.
We're grading on like three different curves, all of which are spray tanned.
Right. I do have a question.
Yes. Ask your question.
Does Rutgers and Michigan State, when they play, do they play for a trophy?
We can invent one.
We should probably come up with a trophy for them this year.
For the situation. We'll just give the situation to one of those two teams. It's all
well,
you.
Whenever they play, they'll probably both be winless.
He's available. I totally forgot that Michigan State had the situation there before it came. And now there's a team from New Jersey here, and oh man, that's perfect.
Yeah, we should.
That's
make
actually
one.
Too spot on.
We know the rivalry trophy guys. We should like call them up and have them make a rivalry trophy version of like the situation.
You just award like a spray tan booth to whoever.
No, it should be like a.
Just a giant statue of the situation.
Yeah, yeah. Like an Oscar statue of the situation.
But have it be like Paul Bunyan trophy size so you can really see it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think we're onto like something. I think we can.
Several thousand dollars, but it might be worth it.
Yeah, I think we need to commission this anyway.
Yeah. What was the Big Ten West rivalry where they came up with like a trophy and it was like a table? Was it
Bits
Minnesota and
chair?
Nebraska?
Yeah.
That was Minnesota and Nebraska.
I think we have a chance of topping that with this.
The problem is that I don't think it's ever going to like we could mail it to the winner of that game and they would just throw it away.
Still worth it. As long as we document the entire process of getting the trophy commissioned and mailing it to the winner, I think it's worth it. Or if we send a representative to the game with the trophy and just see how close to the field they can get with it before they get kicked out. We have to do this now. Like we're talking about this. We have to do this.
We have to prepare for this.
Dude, I'm pulling up the schedule right now.
I don't
see when the
Rutgers like a sculpture done in 2 weeks. I don't think that's the way it
works. We got until November 12th.
No, November 12th. What is today? It's October.
We got some time, man.
You don't know how this works. Like we have to like have a design committee. We can't just this cannot be the Land Grant Trophy,
right?
Yeah, we have to take this very seriously.
We do.
This is the situation.
This is going to be passed down through the years, just like scores getting written on the situation's butt cheek every year.
Yeah,
it really needs to happen.
All right. Well,
you know,
let's go.
I just pulled up Michigan State's page because I wanted to see who they played between now and Rutgers to see if they would actually be winless.
Yeah.
In the Big Ten when they got there. They played Illinois the week before Rutgers, but S&P actually projects them to lose that game right now. Michigan State's win probability against Illinois is 47%.
I don't even think that's been updated for this week, has it?
I don't even know.
I don't know.
Conley hasn't updated the team pages yet. No, so that does not factor in the fact that they lost to Maryland by multiple scores.
Oh, wow.
What a good year. All right.
So are you guys going up to East Lansing on Saturday?
Oh, hell yes.
I am.
Nice.
I expect that it will be fun.
Yes.
I might bring a steak with me and, like, just, like, show it to people and be like, I'm not going to apologize for this. They won't let me bring it in because it's a weapon.
No.
But
right.
I guess, well, they're checking Michigan State for weapons, too.
It was fascinating
too.
Listening to some of the coaches and players from Michigan State in their press conferences and interviews, you know. This is Michigan week. This is, you know, obviously their Super Bowl week, but they're talking about, like, reviewing film to see their mistakes before we even get to focus on Michigan. It's like, wow, they're just in a different galaxy right now, aren't they?
They are. It's yeah. a different world.
It's a galaxy of suck. Yeah. It's pretty great.
The galaxy of suck. All right, Jamie, thank you for calling in. We will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook, and this just needs to be reiterated. Eastern Michigan, 79th in S&P Plus. Michigan State, 81st.
And then Perry Hills.
One more time.
Perry Hills was 21-27.
I struggle with that too, don't worry.
21-27. Perry Hills.
No picks.
No picks.
No picks. Two touchdowns.